south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, I get a lot of emails, and I can't answer every one of them, but on occasion, some very interesting ones come through, like the one I'm going to read you right now. Oh, and by the way, speaking of emails, I do read them all, and it's not that I ignore any of them. I almost always send some kind of response. Now, the ones that I like and will get some attention on the show itself are the ones where you ask me just one or two questions. Then I can go into some detail. However, when you send me emails that are extremely general, I suggest you just check out the archives because I hit on most everything eventually. What I mean by extremely general, well, let me read this one right here to give you an example. It says, "Dear Johnny, I'm 56 years old. I'd like to move to Latin America. I've got a 12-year-old dachshund. No, not a Datsun, a dachshund. And he'll go where I go. I'm on Social Security disability. I make around $1,700 a month. And Johnny, I'd like to know the best place for me and my dog to come down and live in Latin America." And then nothing. That's the end of the email. So how do you answer something like that? Well, if you give me a few hours, I could think of about 3,000 or 4,000 different areas that we could place Mr. Dachshund. I'm sure you long-time listeners get it. So anyway, I get those very general emails, and I get the pretty complicated ones too, where a person gives me their whole background and what they want to accomplish as an expat. But it would be unfair to do a whole show just trying to figure out the perfect plan for one particular individual. Which is why I do phone and Skype consults, and people ask me about those all the time, too. Yes, I do half-hour and hour phone and Skype consults, and I do charge for that stuff. After all, it's all about working out a personal and very individualized plan now. And of course, many times I hook you up with some of my own personal contacts. Best of all, if they're the professional sort, physicians, dentists, lawyers, etc., they not only speak English, they charge Latin prices, not gringo prices at all. In fact, when someone does send me a complete breakdown of their lifestyle, etc., and what they mean to accomplish as an expat, turns out there's a lot of analysis and back-and-forth questions, too much to put in an email without getting carpal tunnel. So instead, I send them a little pre-planning questionnaire letter. It starts out by saying that everyone's situation is completely different, and that your exit plan, your plan B, or part-time living plan, whatever your ultimate expat goal, depends on your age, your sex, your education, your health, your lifestyle, your marital status, whether you have children, dependent or not, as well as what you might call your special skills or hobbies. We all have those, right? And it helps to know your savings or financial cushion, not your projected savings or financial cushion, but what it is right now. Your plan B also depends on your personality type. For example, how people rate you and how you rate yourself. Are you, for example, the adventurous type, conservative, liberal, libertarian, a Buddhist, anarchist, atheist, evangelical, Mormon, or New Ager? You get the idea. And then, of course, what's your physical lifestyle like? Are you a backpacker, vegan, four-star restaurant, umbrella drink type, a jogger, marathon runner, sports fan, scuba, surfer, splunker, bookworm, painter, writer, etc.? Then I have to know if you have an outside income, a pension, social security, disability. Is your grandma sick, gonna die soon and leave you that Picasso etching? What about that Shelby GT in the garage? You gonna bring that down? And this is important. What are your Spanish language skills on a 1 to 10? Do you plan to have a business? Do you need a business? Or are you just wanting to retire into the sunset? What about climate, humidity, insects? Are you into beach and water or highland altiplano regions with perfect spring weather all year round? Or both? That can be arranged, you know, especially in Central America. For example, if you live inland in an altiplano climate, meaning perfect spring weather all the time, if you have a car, you might only have to shoot off an hour or two east or west to hit that beach house on the Pacific or Atlantic Ocean. In fact, if you live in Nicaragua, Panama, Honduras, Salvador, or Guatemala, you could live inland on the altiplano or close to it. Then, on any given weekend, you could take off for a few hours in your car and be on the Pacific or Caribbean coast. In fact, many long-term expat gringos have just that setup. As for me, when I lived in San Jose, Costa Rica, in the Altiplano, it was a two-hour ride to the Pacific or the Atlantic. And when I lived in Antigua, Guatemala, also in the Altiplano, it was about a one-hour ride to the Pacific beaches and about a four-hour ride to the Caribbean. And when I lived in Panama City, it was about 5 minutes to the Pacific and about an hour to the Atlantic. However, nowhere in Panama are you in the Altiplano, so it's always dead, smoldering hot. Now, for example, if you live in the capital city of San Salvador, in the country of El Salvador, you're about an hour and a half from the Pacific coast. Oh, and by the way, a lot of people say, Johnny, you know, El Salvador seems like such a terrible place. They have all those gangs. They say, Johnny, isn't Salvador where that notorious Salvatrucha gang originates? Seems they've infiltrated all the cities up in the States now. So why would I ever want to move down there? Well, let me tell you, I've been to El Salvador many, many times, and there are some very cool and safe places there. In fact, there's a little article I like to keep handy. It's called 10 Things You Must Do When You Visit El Salvador. Sure, in every country they have gangs and violence, including the States and Europe, but they're always in those districts and departments us gringos and expats never want to live, work, play, and or hang out in. It's as simple as that. They've got the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the great, and we stick with the good and the great. Which is why you always want to get boots on the ground and spend at least 6 months in a country before you buy or invest in anything. But you knew that already, right? Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about that little questionnaire I send people who want to do a personal consult when people want me to help them structure their own plan B. Well, before we do that Skype or phone call consult, I ask them what kind of baggage they have too, what kind of junk they have up in the States that they have to get rid of. Like, for example, houses, property, businesses that have to be sold, ex-wives, ex-husbands, kids, grandma's fake Picasso, stuff like that. My advice, have a dumpster ready, maybe two. And to work out that plan B, it's important to know what kind of debt you have. You know, baggage. That said, to make a good and complete analysis to come up with your personal plan B, you'll have to send a good breakdown of the things previously mentioned and a list of 10 or so topics you want to discuss in their order of importance. Then you'll send that along to me a few days before the call so I can think on it a while and help you come up with some solutions. So anyway, for all you listeners out there who want to do a personal consult like that, just send me an email. I'll send you my little questionnaire. We can agree on the time and get started. Oh, and one more thing about those emails you sent to me. I do appreciate a good, crazy Latin American story, that's for sure. We all do. Everyone likes a good laugh. So by all means, send them along, and you can attach a few questions with them too. No problem there. But please don't ask me where the best place is for you and your dachshund to settle on a Social Security disability check. However, not to leave animal lovers out in the cold, I will say this. You are definitely not doing your dog or cat, whatever, a service by bringing them down to a beach or low-altitude climate because it's very, very hot in Latin America, and they'll just lay around a lot and be miserable. That's especially true for your long-haired buddies, unless, of course, you're in the Altiplano. Then, it's perfect spring weather, and utterly fabulous for man and beast. However, unfortunately, I do see some gringos ship down their dogs, their long-haired dogs, and they do not do well in that low-altitude or beachfront hot weather. Now, the local dogs who've been down here for generations and generations, they seem to do well enough. However, they don't quite ever look as healthy as dogs in the Altiplano. And I'm not talking about street dogs, you know, they never look good. That said, gringos are infinitely better pet owners than Latins. I don't care if a Latin pet owner is lower middle class, upper middle class, or wealthy. Those idiots never train their pets. They have no discipline, and they're always crapping around the house or jumping up and humping your leg when you come to visit. Or when you sit on a chair, they're jumping up on your lap. I just don't get it. Latin pet owners are the absolute worst. So, ladies, gringo ladies out there, expect, even if you visit an upper-class Latin's home, expect that dog to jump on you and screw up that fashion look you've been working on for the past hour or so. Now, as for me, I've always had dogs, and I don't tolerate them jumping up and pawing me. And believe me, that's gonna happen to you if you visit a Latin person's house and they have a dog. And of course, you can't blame it on the dog, it's the owner. Which begs the question, where's that poison-tipped selfie stick when you need it? For the owner, not the dog. Okay, while I'm on a rant, let me give you one of my other pet peeves about pet owners, Latin American style. Multiple puns intended. First of all, whether you have pets or not, I never recommend you have furniture that's made out of cloth, or what they call tela, T-E-L-A down here. That means cloth. Because after a while, it gets so grungy and dirty from sweaty adults and kids and Coca-Cola and ice cream spills, etc. Soon enough, it looks, well, just plain gross. Not to mention, after a while, it picks up that locker room kind of smell. You'll see this revolting phenomena even in the houses of the very wealthy, who, by the way, think it's cool to pick out beige or even white-colored cloth furniture. Yeah, it stays that way for about 2 weeks till the kids and the dogs and the cats get at it. Because I don't think I've ever met a Latin pet owner who didn't allow his pets to jump up on the sofas and the couches and the chairs and just hang out there. And I can't tell you how many middle-class and upper-middle-class houses I've been in where the place actually smells like crap. Dog crap. Because in Latin America, at least, man's best friend seems to think a nice quiet place behind any given sofa is easier and faster than going outside. Of course, it will get removed when the cleaning lady gets to it, but believe me, first world style cleanliness in the house and sanitation are not common practices as we know them anyway here in Latin America. I don't care what socioeconomic class we're talking about. So remember, just because a person has a full-time cleaning lady or even a live-in cleaning lady, that doesn't mean the house is necessarily hygienic or sanitary. Not to our standards anyway. In fact, if you're watching this on YouTube, you're going to see some examples of just what I'm talking about. Houses with full-time cleaning ladies, and yet you wonder who, if anyone, taught these ladies how to clean. Which is why when you're down here sitting around with some gringos, sooner or later the subject will turn to cleaning ladies. And that's when the gringas, especially, will try to top each other with cleaning lady stories. So be advised, when you hire a maid or cleaning lady, you just can't hand her a mop and a bucket, some Ajax and some soap and say, get to it. You're going to have to spend some time observing exactly what she's doing, and you're going to want to correct a lot of things. Because remember, cleaning ladies, guards, maids, nannies, etc. come from the poor and lower classes. They don't have hot water nor vacuum cleaners. In fact, you just might have to teach yours how to empty the vacuum cleaner or it'll never get done. Not to mention, most have driveway chickens and a lot of pets themselves. And believe me, they can never keep their houses clean under those conditions. So whatever feudal techniques they are using in their own little houses, that's what they're going to bring to your house. So my advice when you hire one of these ladies, don't get mad, just start training. Which, by the way, always brings me back to what I think is a very cool and what could be a very successful business idea. But I've yet to see any gringo or gringa try it yet. So what's the idea? Well, it's providing a weekend crash course to turn your cleaning lady into a first world style maid. Diploma and all, of course, and I think every middle, upper middle class and wealthy Latin woman of the house would be delighted to spend 50 or 100 bucks to send her cleaning lady or cleaning ladies to a course like that. Why? Because that would be the ultimate in gringo wannabeism. If that's a word, then I don't think it is. But where were we? Oh yeah, I was just about to read a very interesting email. Starts out, hey Johnny, wish I would have found your podcast 2 years ago. Would have got my permanent residency in another Latin American country besides Panama. But however, I was able to obtain the Friendly Nations permanent visa in Panama, which is a plus, because there is no income verification. Ooh, it's me, Johnny, again. I bet you're all wondering what that is, that Friendly Nations permanent visa in Panama. We'll get to that later. Let's finish this email. He says, Johnny, you're spot on that on the gringo trail, cities are much more expensive and the people are pretty much jaded. It's all those U.S. dollars floating around. Anyway, he says, you mentioned in one of your podcasts that Guatemala has a temporary visa that can be extended to a permanent visa after a year and a half. And I believe you mentioned that the temporary visa has no income requirements and a place of last residence police report for the last 5 years is needed. Well, the last 4 years, I've lived in Latin America, 3 in Panama and 1 year in Costa Rica. And between 4 and 5 years ago, I was living in the U.S. Does that mean I would still have to obtain an FBI report for the Guatemala temporary/permanent visa? Would you recommend I apply also for that temporary/permanent Guatemala visa too? Or just wait another couple years to apply for citizenship in Panama? I guess I'm not sure if Panama regularly grants passports to permanent visa holders after 5 years or not. What about Guatemala? Does it provide the passport? Because, you see, obtaining another passport is a pretty high priority for me. Then he says, regarding citizenship and passport in Latin America, he says, you know, I need to figure out my Spanish in order to take the citizenship test one day, don't I? Eventually, that'll happen when I go for the final passport. Learning Spanish will also allow me to get off the gringo tourist trail, too. Yep, for me, it's 4 years on the gringo tourist trail in Latin America, and I've got very little Spanish to show for it. Yes, you're right. I never needed to know Spanish at all, living in Boquete, Panama. Every time I attempted to learn Spanish, I would use interactive software, by the way. And after feeling somewhat confident, I would talk to a local and be completely bewildered because of the speed and the different dialect of Spanish that the computer software could not account for. And you know, Johnny, as far as I can see, the only two things the Latin Americans can do fast are speaking and driving. However, those are the two things I wish they would slow down. By the way, here's a good thing for your listeners to know. It seems that Panama has an option for buying precious metals. It's called VaultMax. It's in the duty-free zone just outside of Panama City. There, you can order gold and silver and have it shipped direct to Panama with no VAT and then nationalized to the country of Panama for a nominal fee. I'm still checking into this company, though. I'm not sure what other dealer would ship precious metals to Latin America and what it would cost for insurance and VAT, etc. Well, that's all for now, Johnny. Signed, Mr. B. Okay, Mr. B, let's take these things one at a time. First, let's talk about that permanent visa program in Panama that very few people know about. It started in 2014, and here's how it works. Panama grants permanent residence and a right to work to applicants who are from what they call friendly nations, which is why they call it the Friendly Nation Visa. And let me list a few of the 50 nations on that list. The USA, Austria, Brazil, Belgium, Slovakia, France, Finland, Netherlands, Ireland, Japan, Norway, Czech Republic, Liechtenstein, Monaco, Andorra, Portugal, Denmark. Almost all 50 are first world nations with just a few Latin countries thrown in. Now, if the US did that, they'd call it racial or cultural bias, wouldn't they? But I digress as usual. Now, you don't have to be living in Panama full-time to qualify for this residency, but you'll have to spend quite a bit of time there. Now, the applicants must have some sort of business, investments, or company incorporated in Panama, or you have to have a contract to work with a Panama corporation. And with that visa, you will be able to get citizenship and a passport in 5 years or so. Now, the easiest way to get a friendly nation visa is to create a business in Panama. To do that, you have to create a Panama corporation or rent or buy into an existing Panama business. Then you have to prove that you're economically solvent. That's done by depositing $5,000 for one applicant and $2,000 for each dependent into a government-approved account in a Panama bank. Then there are a few other hoops to jump through, but then a temporary residency card is provided after the application is filed, and that card is valid for about a year. Then it's replaced with a permanent residency card once your application is approved. Then you're allowed to work full-time in Panama. So what else do you need to apply? You need a notarized copy of your passport and your driver's license. Then they have to be authenticated or apostilled by the Pan-American consulate near you. And you have to submit a notarized copy of your utility bill. Who knows what that's for, but you have to do it. Gas, electric, phone bill, whatever. Then comes the weird stuff. You need a bank reference letter and a professional reference letter from someone high up in an established business in your home country, stating they have known you professionally for a considerable amount of time and that you're a good person of good character and that you don't beat your spouse or smoke crack any more than the next guy. Just trying to see if you're dozing off there. Anyway, same applies to the bank reference letter. The banker has to say that he's known you for at least 2 years and that your account is in good standing. And you'll have to supply copies of your account balance for the last couple of years. Then you'll have to have a written letter describing the kind of economic activities you plan on creating or getting involved in. That would be an abbreviated version of a business plan, the kind you give a bank when you're going for a startup loan. And of course, those documents will have to be notarized and authenticated by a Panama consulate near you, up in the States, that is. Now, Mr. B says he went through this process and it didn't require him to show proof of income. Well, not to confuse things, but in certain cases that can be done. For example, if you're being hired in a professional capacity by a Panamanian company, in other words, you'll have to make contact with the Panama company and get them to agree to hire you, or possibly get recruited from the outside by one of the Panama companies that's advertising for professionals on the net, etc. And if hired as a professional by such a company, the Ministry of Labor in Panama will fast-track your work permit. In addition, you'll have to register with Panama's Social Security Administration. That's so you could get their version of a Social Security card and pay into their piece of dog crap system. In addition, your new employer will need to provide an employment contract or letter explaining the professional capacity you're being hired for. By the way, certain professions are restricted. For example, if you're an architect, attorney, an engineer, a medical doctor, a dentist, or a veterinary doctor, you can't get in under this program. Why? Because they insist that only Panama citizens should fill those kind of jobs. And thus, you'd be competing directly with Panama citizens with advanced degrees. And they don't want that. Anyway, I mentioned you have to supply a written letter stating the type of professional or economic activity you'll be conducting in Panama. But that's not all. Like I said, if you're being contracted by a Panama company, you'll have to provide not only a legit employment contract, proof that the company is registered with the Panama Social Security Administration too, and that you have obtained a Social Security card. Which is kind of a catch-22 because to get that Social Security card, you'll have had to show proof you're working for that company already. I guess there's ways around that. Anyway, as mentioned earlier, another way to get that preferred country visa is to open up a Panama corporation that does business in Panama. And so you'll have to provide documents stating you are either on the board of directors or a major shareholder in a Panama corporation or that you own the company. And if you're applying for that special visa that way, you have to actually prove it's doing business, not just an empty hollow corporation that has no money movement. So if your Panama company or Panama corporation is new, you must submit proof that its corporate franchise tax has been paid along with a copy of its business and commercial license. And if the corporation is over 1 year old, you have to submit a copy of the Panama tax return or certificate of good standing. In addition, you'll have to submit copies of Panama bank accounts for that corporation in that corporation's name, along with the proof of any income that's been produced by sales or services or real estate owned by the company. In other words, what you're doing there is proving that you're economically solvent. So now I think you can see why very few people know about this kind of Panama visa. Just way too many hoops to jump through. Now, by contrast, there are a handful of other Latin countries well off the radar where similar programs exist that are much easier to maneuver through. Whereas, unfortunately, Panama right now is probably the highest profile country in the world with the release of the Panama Papers and all. That said, there are a handful of other Latin countries, including Nicaragua, Guatemala, Honduras, Peru, Bolivia, where all you have to do is open up a corporation in that company, an SA Corp, and that's about enough to get started on permanent residency. Of course, you'll have to do that with a lawyer and leave it in his hands. He'll get the permanent residency going based on the fact that you've opened a corporation and therefore are going to be investing in that country. And you've done so already by opening a corporation, which again runs anywhere from around 1,000 to maybe 3,000 bucks, depending which country you're in. And it might cost 50 to 150 bucks a month to maintain a corporation. So in some Latin countries, it's a fast track to permanent residency. But as you can see in Panama, it's not nearly that simple. Let's see what else. Oh, yeah. He's asking about getting temporary residency in Guatemala because it's got no income requirement. However, he's asking if he still needs a police report that will cover the last 5 years in the places he's lived. And he says he's done 1 year in Costa Rica and 3 years in Panama. Well, in that case, all he really needs is to get a police report from Panama. And that's easy enough to get. You can have your lawyer do it. It costs maybe 15 or 20 bucks. And by the way, what most people don't know is generally in Latin America, you get two police reports. You get one from the city or department you're living in, plus a national police report. Oh, and another thing, if you've lived in a lot of different places over the past 5 years, you can still go right back to your hometown in Cleveland, even if you haven't lived there. Use your parents' or your sister's or brother's address and pull a police or sheriff's report there. However, in Panama these days, you have to pull an FBI report if you're coming from the States. However, Guatemala still only requires a sheriff's report. Oh, and Mr. B, you've got 3 years in Panama now with your permanent visa. That means you've only got 2 years or so, and you can get your passport and naturalization. That's citizenship, so you should stick it out. However, Panama is so high on the radar these days, not to mention they've got all that high-tech biometrics crap at the airport every time you go in and out. I would suggest if you've got the time and inclination to try to get another passport. And Guatemala is one of the easiest Latin countries to obtain one. Of course, in Paraguay, it's easy too, but it's a long, expensive way down if you have to go back and forth, and you need an FBI report. Okay, now let's talk about VaultMax. That's a gold storage company in Panama, and it's run by first world people. You can tell by its website. Just check out VaultMax, and you'll see what I mean. However, I'm totally against storing gold or precious metals, whatever, in a vault or with anyone else. You really must take possession of it yourself if you have to bury it in your backyard. In fact, I know a couple of very sad stories of people who've stored things in vaults. In my own case, I used a private Costa Rican storage company many years ago, and guess what? My Costa Rican lawyer called up one day and said, "Johnny, you better get your stuff out of there because that place is insolvent. It's going bankrupt, and when it does, you won't be able to get your stuff out for love or money." And I shot right over there, took the stuff out, and he was right. 3 weeks later, they closed the doors, and you had to get a court order to get in there and get your stuff back, and I don't know of anyone who was even able to do that. Then I know of a gringo who had a couple of 100 ounces of gold and platinum in Barclays Bank in England in a safety lockup. He paid the fee way into the future, but didn't stop in and visit for many years. Some more years went by, and when he went back, they wouldn't even let him see it, much less take it out. They told him he needed a court order to get it out. Something to do with being a gringo. Of course, there was a little more to it than that, but he never did get his gold back. Bottom line, always take possession. And remember, you can buy and ship gold all around the world fairly cheaply, by the way. In fact, I was just looking at a site the other day. Shift Gold, very reputable firm, has worldwide delivery, and they'll ship practically any amount, but they'll break it up into packages that are worth $10,000 or less because, well, that's the rules. For some precious metal dealers, anyway. By the way, there's a website called comparebullionsites.com, and it lists the 3 best and top-rated gold and bullion dealers that do international shipping. Now, recently I talked to a gringo who bought some gold from a company, had it shipped, and it cost $40 plus 1.5% of the total value. So he bought $10,000 worth, which is around 7.5 ounces. So it was $40 plus $150 to have it shipped and insured. Okay, we're near the end now, and let me remind you, you can still sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar. It starts July 9th, that's a couple of weeks from now. For sign-up information, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 seminar link at the top of the page, and you're in. The fact is, things aren't getting better, they're getting worse, and I know you can feel it too. That means you really don't have much time left to get your Plan B underway. So why not get on the fast track and get it kicked into high gear by coming down to my July 2016 seminar? And while you're at it, do check out John Galt's famous pre and post seminar trips. All in all, a boots on the ground experience you'll never get if you come down here on your own. And finally, do check out my YouTube channel. If you want to see the pictures and slides that go right along with what I'm talking about, do check it out. If nothing else, you're guaranteed a couple of laughs, and who couldn't use that these days?
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.